1:30 docket this afternoon, People versus Clendenon and Western World Insurance versus U.S. Liability. I assume counsel are present, ready to proceed in both cases?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All counsel should have received a set of written instructions that detail our oral argument procedures. Let me ask just first if counsel have any questions about those procedures or instructions?
No questions.
Thank you. We will proceed to hear the argument in the Clendenon case first, and then after that, we'll hear argument in the Western World case. I would remind counsel that to identify yourself by name and attorney registration number when you come to the podium. Also, I'd ask that anybody in the courtroom who has a pager or a cell phone or anything like that, please turn it off now so as not to disrupt counsel and the court during oral argument. I note also that our courtroom has many more people than we're used to today, and so I would ask that in respect to the, with respect to the decorum of the courtroom, that there not be any conversation among yourselves so as not to interrupt counsel and the court in having a discussion of the legal issues in the case. And with that, we are ready to hear argument in People versus Clendenon.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert J. Corey, Jr., attorney registration 32705, and I'm joined at my table by Stacy Clendenon. Ladies and gentlemen, this case is about two distinct issues. Namely, the first issue is the legality of the search of Ms. Clendenon's home. Second issue is the legality of the trial court's order that prevented Ms. Clendenon from calling witnesses on her behalf in her defense. Witnesses, namely patients, medical marijuana patients, who would have testified that Stacy Clendenon was in fact acting as their caregiver and was growing medical marijuana for them for medical use. Those are the two main issues that this appeal presents. Maybe it makes sense to talk about the first issue since it's the first issue in our briefs and the first issue in chronological time. The summary of our argument, judges of the court, is that Ms. Clendenon, the evidence against her that caused the government to obtain the warrant, and by the way, the parties agree that the only two data points used in obtaining the search warrant of Ms. Clendenon's residence was, first of all, some alleged marijuana stalks and leaves, a minimal amount, de minimis, under an ounce amount, found in her residential trash that was publicly accessible out in the front of her house, and secondly, elevated power bills in Ms. Clendenon's residence. Those are the only two bases for the issuance of the search warrant in this case. It's our position that that is insufficient. We also agree that probable cause is the standard. In 2006 in Colorado, when this search warrant was obtained, that is not probable cause of any illegal activity.
Excuse me, counsel.
Let me just ask a preliminary question. With respect to the probable cause issue, my understanding of the law in Colorado and elsewhere for that matter is that on that sub-issue, what we are charged looking at and nothing else is the four corners of the affidavit. How do we do that here if the affidavit isn't in the record?
Your Honor, the affidavit should be part of the trial court record in this case.
It's not.
If it's not in the record, then the court should look to the court's order, the trial court's order, which is a part of the record, and the trial court summarizes the reasons for the trial court's decision, summarizes the four corners analysis, and discusses why the trial court upheld the affidavit and upheld the warrant in this case. And by the way, that's undisputed. Neither party, there's no disagreement as to what the reasons for the trial court's finding were in this case.
Do you have any authority, counsel, that would authorize us to take that approach and review the trial court's order rather than looking at the affidavit itself?
Yes, because the order is the thing that we are appealing. We're appealing the trial court's finding that this was the basis for the search warrant and the trial court's upholding of that. And those two bases, again, we don't disagree. The parties do not disagree on that issue. So the probable cause issue is quite clear, and the trial court's finding is quite clear, and the parties don't disagree. So on those two data points, the elevated power usage and the fact that marijuana was found in publicly accessible trash is simply not enough to uphold the validity of a search warrant. It's not probable cause, because both of those can show, could be evidence of legal activity. Medical marijuana in Colorado was legal in 2006. It's been legal since 2000. So marijuana itself is not illegal, and a search warrant cannot be issued based on marijuana anymore in Colorado, because as of 2000, marijuana can be legal and is legal in many circumstances. Secondly, the trash in and of itself provides no evidence whatsoever because it's publicly accessible. For the same reasons the police officers were allowed to look through the trash, for the same reasons Ms. Clendenin has no expectation of privacy for trash that is publicly accessible outside of her house, it provides no evidence against her, because any person can go put material in those trash barrels because it's wide open. No evidence tying Ms. Clendenin to those trash barrels.
Do the parties agree that the trash can that we're talking about here was in front of her home?
I believe the parties do agree to that. The parties also agree that the trash barrels were publicly accessible, and the parties also agree that the police, under the Hillman case in Colorado, the police were able to search through residential trash because a person doesn't have expectation of privacy there. So for the same reason the person doesn't have expectation of privacy in publicly accessible trash that anybody can walk up to and put anything in or take anything out legally without even trespassing, for those same reasons, things found against that trash can't be used against Ms. Clendenin because there's no evidence that she placed them there, despite police efforts to conduct surveillance. They never saw Ms. Clendenin or any other occupant of the house putting the trash out, putting anything into the trash. Secondly, elevated power usage can alone, once we discount the trash that is publicly accessible, elevated power usage alone cannot justify a search warrant. There are 1,000 reasons why people might have elevated power usage in a home, 1,000 legal reasons why they might use more power. So taken together, those two cannot overcome the probable cause requirement of the Fourth Amendment and a search warrant. And so for those reasons, and despite the fact that the affidavit is not in the court record because the parties don't disagree on it and the court's order upholding it is in the record and summarizes it, the case should be reversed on that ground alone. If the court is unwilling to do so, then the court should address the question, the constitutional question, the central constitutional question that occurred at the trial of this case, which is that Stacey Clendenin was growing medical marijuana for patients. She was growing medical marijuana for a number of legal medical marijuana patients who would have testified at her trial, but for the court's pretrial order that essentially said, to summarize it, if Stacey Clendenin has not met a patient in person face-to-face, she cannot serve as primary caregiver for that patient. That's a misreading of the Colorado Constitution. Colorado Constitution defines primary caregiver as a person over the age of 17, 18 or older who has a significant responsibility for managing the well-being of a patient. That's it. It doesn't say a person who has met the patient in person and has a significant responsibility. It doesn't say a person who's developed a personal face-to-face relationship. All it says is significant responsibility. In this area, this court should show deference to the Colorado Board of Health, which I have provided in a supplemental brief to the court, which came down on July 20th and defined what significant responsibility means.
Well, let me ask you about that. Regardless of what the regulation may say, can you spend a minute or two talking about its effectiveness in this case? I mean, it says right on its face it's effective as of, I think it was sometime in July or August of 2009. So talk to me a little bit about how or why it is relevant to this case.
In terms of the fact that the Board of Health's finding occurred after the trial in this case?
Yes.
Excellent question. I think that what the Board of Health did was create an interpretation of a term, significant responsibility. This court obviously has not made its decision up yet what significant responsibility means, and will do that, but should be guided by other bodies that have examined this issue, should not discount what other bodies have done with regard to interpretation of significant responsibility. Keep in mind, this is a criminal prosecution where the prosecution had the burden of proving Stacey Clendenin's knowing intent beyond a reasonable doubt. So if lawyers and well-meaning, responsible lawyers who thought about these things can't come to an agreement on what that means, then how can the prosecution prove Stacey Clendenin under the Due Process Clause guilty beyond a reasonable doubt about the interpretation of a term, semantic interpretations, that are subject to reasonable disagreement? That's the framework of this case.
Go ahead.
In that regard, and concerning the Department of Public Health regulation that you submitted to us, what, if any, impact does Article 17, Section 8 have on that definition provided by the Department of Health when it says that the General Assembly shall define such terms and enact such legislation as may be necessary for implementation of this section?
Article 18, Section 14 of the Colorado Constitution. Is that what the court is referring to, the medical use of marijuana?
Section 14, subsection 8 of Section 14. Not later than April 30th, 1999, the General Assembly shall define such terms and enact such legislation as may be necessary for implementation of this section. What impact does that have on the Department of Health's ability to define what significant responsibility for managing the well-being of a patient means?
Well, subsection 8 is allowing the General Assembly before April 30th, 1999 to define such terms. The General Assembly has declined to do so up to this date. So the General Assembly has, I would argue, just waived its ability to do that, has not done so by the date in question, therefore cannot be done prospectively. It's too late. In terms of the state health agency or the Board of Health, the Colorado Constitution does allow the Board of Health to enact rules for the administration of the program. And I can give you an exact citation to that, which is Article 18, Section 14, and it allows the Board of Health to enact rules for the administration, and I'm not getting the exact cite here, here it is, subsection 9. That requires the state health agency to act by June 1st, 1999. And it says, by such date, the state health agency shall also enact rules of administration, including but not limited to rules governing the establishment and confidentiality of the registry, the verification of medical information, the issuance and form of registry identification cards, and other issues that are not necessarily presented by this case. So the state health agency, namely the State Board of Health, which has been designated by the governor as the state health agency in question here, is allowed to enact rules of administration. Whether those rules are constitutional or appropriate or not, they have not been challenged, first of all, and also under the case law, those rules are presumed valid. So this court should show some deference to what the State Health Board has done. And what has the State Health Board done? The State Health Board determined that a significant responsibility can be satisfied alone by the provision of marijuana alone, by nothing else, just providing the medical marijuana to the patient. And that makes sense. If we know the Grossman v. Dean case that this court has issued, that was regarding the Gavel Amendment to the Colorado Constitution, that case says that constitutional amendments adopted by the people should be read as a whole. They should also be guided, this reading should be guided by common sense. We don't need to fall back on the rule of lenity, we believe, and that's yet another thing we agree on for obviously very different reasons, but this court should be guided by what the State Health Board has done. The State Health Board has thought through this. The State Health Board held a day-long hearing on this. The State Health Board deals with this every day, the State Health Department does anyway, and the board's decision should have some weight. Now, obviously, it doesn't control this court. This court should use constitutional and statutory interpretation principles, all of which should be in the framework of, keep in mind, a criminal prosecution beyond a reasonable doubt of a human being who the prosecution should have been required to prove her guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and most importantly, under the Due Process Clause and other aspects of the Constitution, she should have been allowed to call witnesses. That's all we're asking for, that she be allowed to call witnesses in her defense and put on her full defense. Let the jury make the ultimate decision. It's obvious that the affirmative defense should be in front of the jury. The trial court got that part right, but where the trial court got it wrong and where this court can correct it is allow Stacey Clendenin another trial, a fair trial, where she can call all of her witnesses, marshal her defense, and let the jury make the call. At this point, I'm almost over, and I'm going to have to save a little bit for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You've got about 44 seconds left.
Thank you, and may it please the court, John Lee, bar number 38141, on behalf of the people. Just briefly on the first issue, probable cause requires only that probability, although the defendant surmises that there are several legitimate reasons why someone might have marijuana stocks in their trash in front of their house, or their electric bill might be four times higher than comparable residences. Our cases haven't drawn that line. And I'd cite this court to the Supreme Court's holding People v. Attlee, where they specifically rejected this argument that probable cause requires more than that.
Mr. Lee, let me ask you, what is your position on whether we can review the issue without the affidavit?
I think we can affirm it based on the court's findings. To the extent this court finds that it's not enough, I'd agree with this court that there's certainly lots of concerns that we don't have the affidavit, that we can't completely review the court's judgment as a whole.
And do you have any authority that would permit this court to review a court's findings in lieu of the affidavit?
No. So if this court were inclined not to review it, I would strongly encourage it to do so. Turning to the second issue. Now, the defendant's basic submission today is that the administrative definition should defeat the more narrow definition in the constitutional amendment. I'd like to make 3 points. The first, the answer is no. There is no applicability between the affirmative defense definition and the administrative definition. As Judge Lowe pointed out, on its face, the administrative rule has an effective date of August 30th, 2009, almost 3 years after the charged offense here. There's no basis in the rule to suggest that it applies retroactively, and with all administrative rules, it must be presumed to have no retroactive application. So regardless of what the ANC's definition says, our review today is strictly limited to what's contained in the amendment. Second, to the extent that this court were to consider it to be persuasive authority, my reading of it is that it absolutely expands the definition of primary caregiver of what's in the amendment. So to the extent that it shouldn't be our understanding at all, I think it goes to show that someone who just cultivates marijuana wasn't included in the amendment. Third, also, as this court pointed out, I think it's important to remember precisely what the agency was authorized to do. The language specifies that the agency has the power only to make rules to maintain and create the confidential registry. They are given no power or authority to define the firm defense or other provisions of the amendment outside of the registry. And I think if we look at the rule, that's exactly what it purports to do. This court will recall that it's actually the definition that the defendant points to is actually contained under the rule for making and maintaining the registry. So I think on its face, the rule has no application here.
Let me ask a question. On this issue, we're called upon to interpret some words in the Constitution, and those words were put there through, I take it, an initiative in 1999 or 2000. We have cases in Colorado, both from our court, divisions of our court and the Supreme Court, including the Grossman case cited by your opponent, that look at the Blue Book, language in the Blue Book. Neither side has cited to us anything from the Blue Book when this initiative was passed. Is there anything there that gives us any guidance, or do you know?
I'm not aware of anything, Your Honor, in the Blue Book. Unfortunately, I didn't look there, so I can give this court no indication. But I do think that this case can be solved based on the plain language of what's in the amendment. And I think it's important to remember exactly how the affirmative category defense was named, primary caregiver, presumably someone who is directing care. The definition then goes on to provide someone who has significant responsibility managing the well-being of a patient. And the defendant today is making what I think to be a rather bold argument that in passing this language, the voters necessarily thought they were enacting affirmative defense that covered everyone involved in the production chain. Growers, cultivators, delivery persons, dealers, the people who are actually caring for these people are all primary caregivers under the defendant's construction. And I think this should strike the court as a counterintuitive reason for two reasons. First, the fact that a patient can have numerous primary caregivers, I think, defeats the purpose of the term primary. It's primary caregiver. Second, I think this court should recall exactly how the amendment defined medical use. Now, medical use is defined in the amendment would include all of those people, everyone involved in the medical marijuana production chain. And yet, that's not the broad stance that voters took when they passed the amendment. They picked different language, far more limited.
So let me just ask you a real practical question here. So everybody agrees that this was, the affirmative defense is available to what I would call a qualifying patient and a qualifying primary caregiver. I'm assuming that, I mean, even though it may not be in the record, that there's some time frame in terms of how long it takes to grow medical marijuana. It just doesn't come down from the sky. Somebody's got to grow it. So if I'm a patient and I have a doctor who says, you know, I know you've got this disease or this incredible pain or you're taking chemotherapy and we got to get you on medical marijuana today, how do you do that? I mean, how do you do that without going out and finding somebody who's growing and selling marijuana and buying it from them? I presume if you're the patient, you've got an affirmative defense, but what about the person that you sold it to?
I agree with you, Your Honor. I think that is a practical problem, but that is one that the amendment created. I think if we look at 482 and 283 in the primary caregiver defense, what it does is it sets forth limits on how much a caregiver can have directly proportional to what the patient needs. It's presumably 2 ounces per patient or more if medically necessary.
But if I need it right away, I got to get it from somebody. It's going to take me a while to grow it if I'm a patient and I want to do it myself. So where do I get it legally?
Legally, you have to wait. Under the amendment, because it uses managing, in addition to those limitations I just cited to, the amendment necessarily requires that the cultivation happen after someone gets prescribed for marijuana and wants it. To the extent that as we operate this program, that creates a problem. If the voters or the legislator want to change that, I don't dispute that. But the amendment as written strictly prevents that from happening, and the fact that it's managing, it's active, not passive. It requires there to be that direct nexus between what a primary caregiver has and what a patient needs at the time. So that's the limitation that was written into the amendment.
Speaking of the amendment, let me ask this question. I noticed in the amendment that when a patient applies for a registry card, he or she is to supply a lot of information, including the name and address of a primary caregiver. It says if one is designated at that time. With regard to the witnesses proposed to be called by the defendant in this case and which were precluded by the trial court, Is there anything in the record indicating whether the defendant had been named or designated as a primary caregiver for those proposed witnesses?
I could be wrong, Your Honor, but it's my recollection that she was not. And I think in the briefs, the defendant specifically argues that that's not a requirement to be named as a primary caregiver in order to claim the defense.
And I take it you agree with that?
I don't think it's necessarily before this court. I don't think we have to decide that issue here. Because that's not a ground that the trial court relied on, and I think we can come to a conclusion on this case without having to address that issue.
Let me ask you a question about case authority here. In reading through some of the cases cited in the briefs from other states, there's argument back and forth about this California Supreme Court case. But in that case, the California Supreme Court refers to other states that have similar definitions, and I believe it talks about Oregon and Nevada as having a definition of primary caregiver that's virtually identical to what we have in Colorado. Are you aware of any case interpretations in those states of that term?
No, to my knowledge, the only two states that have addressed this issue are the two cited in the brief, California and Washington. And those cases both came in accord with what we're asking the court to do here, and that's the language means something more than just cultivating marijuana.
However, both of those states have statutes which are a little more expansive than what we have here in Colorado. They have different language in those particular statutes. How does that impact the reliability of those particular decisions from California and Washington?
Well, I think we compare the statutes, I actually think ours is more burdensome in the relationship that it requires. Both of those only just required responsibility. Ours requires significant responsibility. And I would also like to address the argument the Senate makes in reply brief in the Washington case. In Washington, the original language of the amendment was someone who has responsibility for the health, I think, of the patient. That court found that that necessarily required more than cultivation. The legislature two years later then changed language and got rid of the care portion of it and said that the primary caregiver is just someone who's designated by the patient. I think if we look at that, that only buttresses what the trial court did here, because it's saying that if we have care, then it necessarily requires something more than cultivation. Because in that case, the legislature, once they got rid of the word care, they then said now it can be someone who only cultivates. So I think all the courts who reviewed this issue are in accord that if it has responsibility for care, it necessarily must be something more than cultivation. No other court, to my knowledge, has gone the other way.
Well, I believe that the language here is significant responsibility for managing the well-being of a patient, and it doesn't use the word care, as in giving actual care, but responsibility for well-being. So what is your response to the position of Ms. Clendenin that well-being means to be able to obtain medicine?
I think well-being and care are comparable words. I don't agree with the defense that necessarily expands the definition to where it means something different than care, and especially when we look at the word as a whole. I mean, we refer to it as a primary caregiver, something that some of the other states don't have, which again I also think connotes some idea of direct care between the caregiver and the patient. So I think we look at it as a whole, certainly it's at least equal, if not greater, to the requirements as set forth in the other two states where the courts have decided that it means more than just cultivation.
What's your thoughts on whether or not the term significant responsibility in the amendment goes as far as the trial court's holding that in order to qualify as a primary caregiver, one has to have contact with the patient?
I think that's probably right. I think the significant responsibility, and we look at it as a whole, as I was trying to argue earlier, it's necessarily, when the voters passed it, they probably thought it was someone who was providing direct care to the patient, someone who does more than just cultivation. And I think that's really just the precise focus of this case, that we can affirm the court's grounds of finding that there has to be more contact than just cultivation, and not necessarily just on the in-person contact. Because I think it's undisputed in both briefs that the defendant was only providing cultivation with no other responsibilities to the patients.
Can I go back to the regulation for a minute? Setting aside the issue of its applicability to this case, do you agree or disagree with Mr. Corey that on its face, that regulation provides a definition that is consistent with the defendant's position in this case?
Absolutely not. I think we're dealing with two completely different models of reasoning. When we're talking about the constitutional amendment, we're limited to exactly what the voters passed when they enacted it. The agency, they were allowed to define terms for the context of the registry however they wanted. So there's no element for change in our examination of what the affirmative defense says for within the constitutional amendment. The agency can say whatever they want. So because we have such divergent ability to make different conclusions, one just can't inform the other.
I guess that didn't really answer my question. The question is, separate and apart from applicability, what the agency can and cannot do, the words that they used in their definition, do you agree or disagree that those words on their face are consistent with the position that the defendant is taking here? In other words, do those words authorize simply cultivating and providing marijuana as being significant responsibility for the well-being of a patient?
I would agree that it is consistent with the defendant's argument. I would disagree that's consistent with the language in the amendment.
I understand. Okay, thank you.
If the court has no further questions, I ask you to affirm the judgment of the court below. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Corey, you've got about 45 seconds.
Try to speak quickly. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I guess what you're hearing from the Attorney General is that Colorado voters wanted to enact a provision, and this is following up on Judge Loeb's question as to whether there should be human suffering. And Colorado voters legalized medical marijuana. They legalized marijuana use for medical purposes, but they didn't legalize anybody to grow it or provide it or give it to the patients. And Colorado voters wanted people to suffer during that time period they're waiting. That's what the Attorney General's argument is. That argument doesn't make any sense. Medical marijuana is legal. This court should give effect to the constitutional amendment as a whole and the voters' intent as a whole, and should not defeat the purpose of the voters by allowing people to be prosecuted for growing only for medical purposes. So we're asking that this court come in and give Stacey Clendenin a fair trial, a chance to call her patients as witnesses, people who she was intending to help, and people who would have testified that they were being helped significantly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted. An opinion will issue in due course. Counsel on the Clendenin case are excused, and if counsel on the insurance case want to set up, I will proceed on that case.